Hey everybody, this is Steve from Asian Boss, and today this is the first episode of the Danny Kim Show. I just made that name on the spot.
Oh.
It's like the Joe Rogan Show, but it's Danny Kim.
The best shows have the name. So.
Yeah. Mm. And basically what we're going to do, this is a new video podcast series that we're starting. And we're just going to be interviewing, well, I'm going to be interviewing people from the K-pop industry, artists, or just, you know, people working inside the industry, and just people that are interesting to me, people that I want to date. That'll be a good excuse. Like, hey, be my guest.
Yeah, be in a room with me alone for like a good hour.
Yeah. Get to know her and stuff like that. So it'll be just interesting people. I just want to like expand our content into not only focusing on the artists themselves. Of course, we're going to have artists on this show, but like other people in the industry and just expand the spectrum of spotlight. In the K-pop industry. So we have today, introduce yourself, Riddhi, please.
Right. My name is Riddhi and I'm with Rolling Stone India. I'm a senior writer and a producer.
Hmm.
Yay. Yeah. I write about K-pop in case you didn't get that.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, like, do you write exclusively about K-pop on Rolling Stone India?
No, I actually write about a lot of different things. I write about, I'm a features writer. So I do interviews with many, many artists, figures in pop culture in India.
Mm-hmm.
So social media stars, actors, like you name it. Like, but I do focus, like majority of my writing is focused on K-pop because it's just me writing about it.
Yeah.
So I'd say like 3/4 of the stuff I write is K-pop.
Interesting. So that's ready, everybody. And so like I just wanted to invite you to talk about you maybe.
Okay.
And the experience of being a music journalist and especially talking about K-pop, because I think that's a very specific experience, like talking about K-pop, and you also have to deal with a lot of different you have to cater towards the fans of K-pop, and I think that dynamic can get a little interesting.
It does.
you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So, first of all, tell me like how you started writing about music. Like, how did you get this job?
Oh wow! I started writing about music when I was 15 or 16.
Hmm.
I actually started my own blog because I just wanted to get my thoughts out whenever I would listen to a song or an album or discover an artist. So I just started my own blog and just it was really shit writing, but I would just put it out there, you know. And I actually been wanting to work with Rolling Stone since I was 14.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was about 16 years old or 17 in high school, I reached out to Rolling Stone India. And I was like, oh, can I intern with you guys? And they were like, no, you're too young. Like, someday, but you're too young. And then I was like, oh, shit, you know, like, okay, maybe someday. And a few years later, like, I was working in PR and I got an email from the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone India, and he actually found my blog through my dad.
What did your dad do?
They randomly met at this jazz club. They got seated at the same table or something, I don't know, because their families had both ditched them. So they both sat together and started talking, and my dad just said, oh, you know, my daughter runs a music blog, like check it out. So he did. He checked out the website and he reached out to me and he said, come on in, let's talk a little bit. And I thought at first that, you know, he wanted to discuss like some PR stuff. So I went over there, and then halfway through that conversation, I realized he was interviewing me like for a job. And I like had this moment of what's happening in the world right now, you know, like existential crisis, but like in a good way. And then I got the job. Like he told me like, when can you join? And I couldn't actually believe like how it had come to me, you know, like, I was at a really low point at that point of time, and I knew PR wasn't what I wanted to do. Although like my like employers, they were great. We had a good time, but I knew that wasn't the career for me. I wanted to write. So, and I wanted to write about musicians.
Music. Yeah.
So it all worked out. And so that's, I joined Rolling Stone India on 4th January 2016.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah.
That's pretty
recent. Yeah.
But you made a name for yourself, I think, in the K-pop community. I think so. Because, like...
a little bit.
And I also thought, like... So Rolling Stone India is like a separate entity from Rolling Stone magazine, right?
Yeah, it's like a franchise.
Yeah, yeah. So is there a lot of interest in K-pop for that specific branch of Rolling Stone? Like, is there a specific reason why you decided to focus on K-pop?
This is a very interesting question because for many years, like Rolling Stone India was seen as, you know, metal and rock. So a lot of the fan base for the magazine itself in India till now is very indie music and rock and metal focused. And when I came in, I think like everyone on the team wanted to start expanding because everyone wanted to start writing about things that were outside of these certain genres. And they wanted
let's
to...
Let's be honest, like metal and rock is... kind of dying.
It's pretty much dead right now. I mean,
as a fan of rock.
Same here.
I love rock, and I used to be in a rock band myself. But I'm like,
oh, me too. Wow.
Yeah, like I used to play guitar, but like I'm like, when I was before I went to the military, I was like, you know, going to these live clubs, and it was exciting, you know, in Hongdae and stuff like that. But after I finished my military service, all these clubs were dead. A friend of mine was telling me this.
Like, I was with him in Hongdae, like, last time I came to Korea, and he was just... We were watching all the dancers, right? You know, like...
The buskers.
Yeah, the buskers. Yeah. And he was like, damn, like, this place used to be filled with musicians, like, with their instruments and stuff, busking. And he told me how many clubs had shut down, like, where people would perform. And it's the same thing in India. There's a lot of live venues that have been shut down, and the live scene, it's difficult, but people are trying to pick it up. But it is... It's so tough to get people to attend gigs. And so we were also thinking, like, how do we write about different things and write about and become more pop culture and more expanded true to our international counterpart's name, you know? So then I actually did not... I had to fight to write about K-pop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were very skeptical?
Yeah, everyone is, like, in India at that point in time as well, this is, like, late 2016, you know, like, it was still, like, it hadn't blown up the way it has now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember, like, all my bosses are, like, super supportive. They're great. But then there's always that, I don't know, like, really, because they didn't know enough about it. So they were like, will this work with our audience? So they were a little hesitant, but then because they saw that I was so... like passionate and that I loved it, they were like, okay, like we still want our writers to write about what they want. So they said, go ahead, like see what happens. And so then I wrote a few articles and it was a general stuff, like 10 artists you need to know about. And I was so nervous, you know, putting it out. But it got like pretty good reception. So then I thought, like, why don't I try reaching out to an artist for an interview? And I was like, let me find the perfect artist who is not like K-pop, like in your face, and can be that bridge to ease Indian audiences into it. And that artist was Dean. He is perfect.
Yeah. He's not the typical K-pop idol, but also he's... has a very soothing voice, and he's very attractive.
He ticks all the boxes.
All the girls like Dean.
Everyone likes Dean. And I reached out, and he said yes, and he did the interview. And when he put that out again, we saw like comments saying, "What? Rolling Stone India is writing about a Korean artist?"
I was so surprised too myself.
I still hear that. Yeah.
Everyone's
like, "Why does Rolling Stone India care?"
And I know, it's like out of all the voices, like Rolling Stone India.
Well, we are the biggest Rolling Stone in Asia. So
There's no Rolling Stone here. So
There is our, like, we've got family in Japan. Rolling Stone Japan is there, but they just started quite recently. So I mean, as long as you're giving an artist a platform, I think it shouldn't be an issue.
I thought it was cool. Like, you know, it was so random, but at the same time, it's like, wow, like it's just expanding. K-pop's expanding everywhere.
I hear that from the artists too. Yeah. Like, really? Yeah. Like, when I was here for the interviews, they're like, so what are you doing here? Like, why?
Which was the favorite artist you've interviewed? Like, what was your favorite interview so far?
Oh, God.
This is hard to choose, right?
It's so difficult because every conversation with an artist for me is like, that's my zone. I'm like, you talk, I'll listen. I'll just sit there and I'll like, I'll prompt you once in a while, but that's it. Uh-huh. And one of my favorites, which is non-K-pop, let's do that.
Yeah, okay.
So non-K-pop, my favorite interview was with Matty Healy, who is the lead singer of the 1975.
Okay.
And I think that was my first big interview, ever, you know?
Yeah.
And I just told him that I know your music in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you want to say, whatever you want to reference, I will know about it.
Mm.
He was so happy to hear that. So then we talked like it was like literally a fan and an artist having like a really civilized conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, you remember, right? When we released that, like what that meant. And I was like, yeah. And we didn't want to hang up the phone.
Mm.
So it was just like his agent had to intervene and say like, okay, like time's up. You know, yeah, you have the schedule. Yeah. So then he was like, oh, like I'm having such a good time. And that meant the world to me. That showed me that artists can really enjoy being interviewed and having a conversation.
It's not like a typical business interview, you know?
Like,
I mean, like, so is that the key to a good interview, do you think? Like, is that?
Yeah, to me personally, I feel like if you make the artist feel comfortable and you let them tell their story, like don't try to... At least that's what I do. I don't try to impose a certain angle on them.
No.
Where I'm like, if there's like, suppose like someone's all talking about an artist dating, I never ask an artist about their personal life. If they want to bring it up, that's up to them. I never want them to feel like they have to be pressured to answer something. I just, that's the kind of interviewer I am. Like different people might, you know, like do different, they explore different angles. But for me, it's about giving the artist that moment to shine and explain their art. So that I'm like, stage is yours, man. Like you you talk, you express yourself, you have a great time. Like that's what I want to do.
Interesting. Do you listen to, like, even if you don't know the artist, like when you, before you go into interview, do you like listen to their entire discography? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I try to do that too. Like for me, the most difficult part with K-pop idol interviews is I'm like just fucking terrible at this remembering people's faces.
Oh no.
See, like if you want to talk about music, like I love music and I've also written about music too. Like we had this web magazine, online magazine that I used to write for. And like I love like writing about that shit and I love talking about that shit, but like differentiating faces for K-pop idols, at least, especially like where they're stylized in like very similar, uniform ways, right? It's like, oh man, like it's a nightmare.
It is. It's a new, when I first came into this world, I was like, okay, this is not gonna be an easy task.
No, that's like, the hardest part for me.
Oh God. Like have you seen 17? Like come on.
Oh, I mean, shit. Yeah, I've seen 17. Oh. Yeah, but like I had the benefit of only seeing three of them at once.
Ooh.
So I was lucky, you know, like okay, at least I can differentiate the three of them. But if it was like, you know, like 10 plus members and I'll be like, oh man, if it was all the 13 members, I'd be like, oh.
I don't know. I mean, now I know all of them so well because they were the group that I practiced learning names with.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, if I memorize
you
all
into the
30,
deep end.
Oh yeah. I was like, now I'm ready. Like if I memorize all of 17's names, I will be ready for anything.
Yeah.
And then it happened and now NCT was like nothing
to me. NCT is impossible.
It is very possible. I know all their names. And I can
give
tell
me some
apart.
Tips. Give me some tips in memorizing names. How do you go about it? Like, what's your process like?
Okay, so I basically look, you know, like the K-pop profile websites.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I go over that like 100 times. Picture with name. Uh-huh. Picture with name.
Uh-huh.
And what really helps is knowing their role in the group.
Oh,
I don't know why,
right.
But that
really
helps.
Yeah.
And another great tip is when you go online and you see the lyric.
Lyric video.
Lyric video.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
the color keeps changing, right?
The color coded shit.
Yeah, the color coded shit. And then it'll be like the member's face.
Oh, yeah.
So that way you learn what they sound like as well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it is brilliant.
I think I've used the color coded stuff too. I've looked at the profiles too, but the thing with the profiles is like, okay, once I look through them like, you know, about 20 times, I can kind of get an idea of like, okay, this person's this. But then once I go to the music video, it's like, what? they don't look like the profile pictures. Like, they're different. They're different faces now. So like, it's a constant process, but I'm getting there. Like, if I'm genuinely really, really interested in a group, then I think it's a little bit easier for me to get their faces. But if it's just like for an interview, like, I try to get myself interested, and usually I do, but it's still difficult.
It is.
And plus, they look different from like the music videos to real life.
Yeah.
That adds another layer of. So what I do is, I just remember, like, if somebody has a very distinct look, I just remember that person. And then the rest, I kind of just, like,
that
give up.
That happened with me and RM. Like,
RM looks different.
Yeah, when I first saw Dope, I was like, okay. Because everyone else sort of blended into each other. It was so fast. Dope just flew past me.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, Jungkook came in with the police outfit. Hi.
Yeah.
Like, he's cute. But then I didn't know he was, like, 17 or 18 at the time.
Yeah.
But that time, as soon as RM came into the frame, every time I saw BTS, after that, like, I knew him.
RM is very recognizable.
RM is so distinctive. And that's how my parents also identify BTS. Because they're like, oh, it's RM. So they know him too. It's pretty amazing. And then for GOT7, my parents know Jackson.
So
it's fascinating to see how even new people will pick out which member they, like, you know, like, latch on to. Pretty amazing.
For me, 80s, Hongjung was that guy.
Same for me.
Because he had the hair. Now he's cut it off, but yeah.
I know. I was pretty sad about that. I don't think, I mean, so many idols have worn mullets, but, like, he really made it work.
Yeah.
And I'm a mullet enthusiast, so.
Oh, really?
I'm all for that.
I was thinking about getting one, but I don't know.
You should.
Everybody's like, no, don't
do it. I'm going to support that. I love mullets. So, like, yeah, definitely. So favorite K-pop interview was 80s. Like, for a long time, it was BTS.
But you interviewed BTS before?
Yes.
Oh, sure. I did not know that.
Oh, you did not know that?
No, sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah. It was in 2017.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, that interview took 6 to 7 months to get a contact for BTS.
Shit.
They're
so busy. Yeah.
They're so busy and, like, good reason. I mean, that's excellent. You should be busy. And, I mean, but even getting in touch with them, like, getting in touch with Big Hit or any PR is so difficult. Like, they are on the top. But that conversation, for me, like, with RM, it's solidified that this is what I want to do, like, and specifically with Korean artists. Because I don't know, after we dropped that interview, our website crashed. And
that's what armies do.
Yeah.
They crash websites.
But no, I'm so happy about it. Our whole team was standing around and staring at the computer screen, like, because our IT, like, you know, like, team is trying to fix it. The website kept crashing. And I just knew, I was like, this adrenaline rush that I got, and the way I felt so happy with people, they like that connect to him. Like, they liked that he, like, especially Indian fans, they liked that they were spoken about.
He spoke about Indian fans.
Yeah, of course. Like, I mean, I told him, like, you know, it was, a lot of the interview was centered around India, and, like, do you know how many fans you have here? And to be honest, I also didn't know, like, what the fandom was like in India at all. And after that interview came out, and he is so random, I love it. Like, he talked about how there's this song by Daler Mehndi, which is really popular here in Korea, called Tunak Tunak Tun.
Oh, yeah.
So he's so random that he told me he sang it when he was in high school, when he was 14. And he started singing it for me, like, over Skype. So I had this, again, this moment of what's happening. This is the leader of BTS singing this meme song.
It's like the Gangnam Style here.
It is. Yeah. That's what we talked about.
It's like the Gangnam Style.
So we were, but then that whole conversation sort of made it clear, like, this is what I want to do. And then after that interview, I think, like, we saw how strong the fans are in India. Like, before, it was like, okay, like, we're getting some attention, like, you know, from, but even Indian fans did not know that we were covering K-pop. So then when they saw, like, when, of course, ARMY saw that India has a voice now, like, the Indian fans are like, we have a representative. So, like, we have Rolling Stone India, who's able to bridge us to our artists, which to me is so important. Like, even as a fan, like, that's what we all want. We want someone to tell the artist, like, your fans exist, you know, we are valid, and we want you to come to our country. So that's what most of the comments that we get are like, thank you for, you know, letting them know.
So before Rolling Stone India did K-pop, there weren't any major news outlets doing it?
No. It was a couple of papers, like very few in the northeast of India, mm-hmm. I think. And because in the northeast, K-pop is part of the culture. I mean, they've grown up on it past 20 years. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? So random.
It's, I know.
Why?
That's a whole story. But basically, Bollywood was banned for a while. Oh. So because there was like a revolution happening, and yeah, it's a long story. Political conflict.
Yeah.
So they banned they banned Bollywood. So people were like, okay, so we need entertainment. What are we gonna do? So then they started looking at K-dramas and K-pop and like entertainment from Korea.
Uh-huh.
So that's why the northeast of India is very familiar with Korean culture. Like they've been doing this like 20 years. They've been into it. So they are way ahead of the rest of India in that sense. They're amazing. They know so much. And they're like, oh my God, like now you're catching up. Like, are you serious? Like the rest of India is just like, hey, we love K-pop. And then they're like,
You guys are 20 years late. Wow, this is so fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes when I go on travel, there are times when like I'm like surprised like that there's K-pop here, like in this random ass like small little town. There's people listening to K-pop?
Oh God, yeah. My friend went to Italy and she found like this, she was in a tiny town and she found like a K-pop store which was run by Chinese people in Italy.
What Chinese people run
and
everything?
They were fluent in Korean and Italian of course Chinese.
What is... well, one of our fans, she told me like, this is in America, so I guess it's less shocking, but... there's this town called Yucca Valley. It's basically like, I don't know, 4 or 5 hour drive from LA.
Okay.
And it's in the middle of the desert. There's like, I would say 7,000 people living there probably.
Oh,
it's like
a really small town.
I've been there. And actually like they had TXT come to their town. For like a photo shoot or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's like a desert, so it's like a very scenic place. And then everybody's, according to her, everybody thought it was BTS because it was the only Asian K-pop band they know. So like, I wasn't even surprised that they know BTS in Yucca Valley in the middle of the freaking desert. So yeah, it's truly surprising. I guess that's the power of the internet.
That's why I feel K-pop is blowing up so much in India right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, our internet, like thanks to a certain company, has gotten very cheap. And they've done a brilliant job doing that and they've made the internet so accessible to every corner of India. And it's so, like, phones are cheap, internet rates are cheap, and data is fast. So many people in villages, tier two cities, tier three cities, they're able to access and learn. So that's why a lot of different trends are now hitting India. And even K-pop is like being shared like crazy. And it's not just K-pop. I mean, like a little while back, I did hear that a lot of the K-R&B artists are being like shared on college campuses, which to me is so interesting. Like they'll find it via SoundCloud, right? And then they just forward each other the links.
Wow.
And like my brother, in fact, was like, oh, who's this artist? And I was like, how do you know this artist? Like what? And then he was like, yeah, like someone in my college is listening to it. And when I tell the artists here this, they're also like, what? India? Like, it's that same, like, really my music is being shared on campuses in India. That look on their faces is like, that's great, but how? How did it get there, you know? And it's, every day I'm like, whoa, like, there's, like, a lot of stuff happening that we don't know about.
Yeah. It's kind of like that Arctic Monkey story. Do you know the...
what's that?
Arctic Monkey's the rock band.
So,
like, when they started, their music was being shared among fans via the internet, like illegally.
Oh.
And they were so surprised when they would go to these random ass, you know, villages and perform there in these small, you know, pubs.
Know. Yeah.
And everybody knows the word. It's like, what the hell is going on here?
Oh my God.
What is this internet thing?
I didn't know that about Akimonkeys. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, I think, in the mid 2000s, maybe even a little bit before. So it's like they weren't really accustomed to this kind of environment, obviously, of distribution. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's truly surprising, and I think that's great. Is that why, like, maybe, like, T-Series is blowing up, right? Like,
yes.
Like, is that, I figure, like,
oh, yeah, that's
internet is getting distributed at a very rapid pace the past
few years.
Right. So that's that.
Exactly, that's, the past 2-3 years.
Mm.
And that has led, and because T-Series, they are the company that has all the film licensing.
Yeah.
Like the soundtracks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they distribute the, like, meaning they put up the music videos. Like, that's the only place you can go and, like, legally, properly watch the music videos in high quality. And meaning there are other channels like this, like there's Eros Now and, you know, there's, like, a couple of channels like this.
Mm-hmm.
But T-Series, I think, has the most...
They're like the Vivo.
Yeah, they're like the Vivo. That's, like, a good comparison. And they also hold the rights to a lot of soundtracks and, you know, like, are... Yeah, like, even if you stream your stuff on Spotify, like, T-Series has the rights to certain films and things like that.
So they're like the rights holders.
Yes. And they're amazing. They're huge. Uh-huh. They're a music company that's doing some pretty... I mean, it's genius to go onto YouTube and put the music there. I mean, how else are a lot of people even internationally going to access the music?
Uh-huh.
Because, a lot of deals with Spotify and stuff hadn't been signed by Indian companies.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of music was not on streaming platforms.
Mm.
So you go to YouTube to listen. And YouTube is, I mean, everyone knows YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's why T-Series, with everyone getting the internet, has just blown up. Because Bollywood is
popular.
Everyone in India knows Bollywood. So that's why they go there for their music. And they go there to party and, like, let's put some, like, you know, tunes on YouTube.
On.
And then, like,
And that's the thing.
That's the thing.
Okay, well, I want to ask one more question about T-Series on the subject. So I heard that T-Series initially started as, like, an illegal upload channel. Is that true? Like,
I don't know about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I could be wrong here, but I actually looked up it on Wikipedia or something. I vaguely remember.
Mm-hmm.
And how they started was, like, they would... just illegally re-upload these soundtracks. But then they got really popular that they became legit. It's kind of crazy.
I don't know, because they are like a music company. So
Now they are.
This could be totally out of my ass. I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I wrong about the world? Has everything I know been a lie this whole time?
I don't know.
No, I don't think they're... T-Series is a very popular brand in India.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're like thinking, now I'm like questioning everything because I'm like, was I wrong about this? I'm going to look that up. I'm going to double check on
I'll look it up.
Because
this
they
might be edited out if it's wrong. But,
No, but they are distributors, you know.
Now they're legit.
They're legit. Why I've never questioned, because T-Series, like, if you buy a CD or you buy a cassette, their label is on it.
Oh.
Like, and this is like way back, like before the YouTube stuff and all
really?
That. Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay, so then I might be wrong.
I know, we'll check up on this then we'll see.
Yeah.
But T-Series, what happens is, like, even if you see a movie, like, you know, they'll before the movie starts, like, T-Series logo will come if the movie is, like,
no wonder
signed.
They have, like, freaking 100 million subscribers.
They do. They have rights to them. So I'm like, why would you illegally upload something? Like, you are the distributor.
Okay.
So, like, I'm interested to see how maybe people thought they were, like, being shady.
I think they thought it was, like, a situation where... you know how, like, those old illegal download platforms, some of them, at least in Korea, actually there was one called Soribada.
Mm-hmm.
And now
it's
a major chart, legit thing, but it used to be, its origins and how it got popular was, it used to be a platform for P2P, downloading.
Like LimeWire.
Like LimeWire. It was the LimeWire of Korea. So there was a lot of... I don't remember porn being on it. It was mostly, I think, MP3s. But yeah, that's how it got started. So it's interesting.
That's very, I did not know that about Suryapatha. So that's like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand why you would think that then about T-Series.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah,
why people
yeah,
would even yeah. like consider that. Yeah. Because
it's pretty crazy.
I don't know, how do you get from like, you know, illegal, like, you know.
That happens a lot in Korea, though. That happens a lot in Korea. Like, so like the Korean content market, it used to be just riddled with all these illegal websites and services. Basically, nobody was paid for anything. It was terrible. It was terrible.
India
it
too.
Was terrible. And now what happens is these illegal platforms have become legit, and now they're streaming services. It's crazy. It's crazy. Wow. You can download movies for legit.
Oh my god, I want to look into this and do like more research.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So these are legal companies now, and that's happened in Korea. So interesting. What would you say like your interaction with the K-pop fans would be, going back to K-pop? Like, what's that like? Do you ever fear, like, have you had any controversies with your...
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't be a journalist, especially on K-pop Twitter, and not have a controversy. Because, I mean, you guys know too, you've had it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
we've all had it. And a lot of the time, you're very... It was something that happened to me a couple of months back, and it was, like, really bad. And till now, I keep finding people who, like, blocked me.
Oh,
because they'll be subtweeting about like, oh, don't follow this bitch, you know, like she's like, you know.
Yeah, we get that too.
Yeah, and every time I like see like someone has blocked me, like every day it's like two or three people have blocked me, and I'm like, okay, that's
still
weird.
Going
like,
on.
Okay, still happening? Are you really that pressed? Like honestly, and it was something so silly because it was about I don't want to name fandoms or anything like that, but it was like about bringing artists to India, and people were pressed about. The fact that I said you need to support like smaller artists that come before the big artists come in. That's just concert culture anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's true of even if it's like if you want Ariana Grande to come, you better support every single songwriter who comes in here, because the point is it goes back and people talk about it. Like India
they
was
they
such a good
a proven
crowd.
Market.
Yeah,
yeah,
how
big companies
else,
want proven markets. They're
how else are they
going to
test
in.
Their markets?
Yeah,
they
yeah,
test
exactly.
it. And for someone who's in the industry who knows this testing is going on, that companies are like, send a small artist, let's see what happens. That's the attitude. And to be told you are wrong and that's not how it works. And I'm like, were you in those meetings? I'm sorry. Like, were you sitting there with me and listening to what these people were saying, what they want?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's after a point, I was like, at the end, I'm in this industry and I am working on bringing artists to India. I am trying to do my best, and the companies and the labels are trying their best. And we know what the truth is. So that was a big part of me trying to, like, you know, move past it, where I was like, you know, people are going to talk shit about you no matter what you say.
Regardless.
And I know, like, the artists that I was talking about would not have a problem with what I said because they also want to come. And the idea is to figure out how to do that. And we are all working on that right now so hard to bring not just big artists in, but everyone. Like, how do you connect the artists to their fans? How do you make that dream come true for fans to see them, you know, like live in front of you? Like, that for me is like when I see my favorite artists, it's a moment of like, I did it. I'm here. So I want to make that happen for fans in India too. And a lot of the time, all the fans talking shit were not Indian fans. So many were not Indian fans. And I'm like, you don't understand concert culture in India, and you're able to make all these statements and create hate. But and then I realized that it's just pointless. It's pointless engaging and talking about all this stuff. And I'm like, nah, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm like, say what you want. Like, I'm still going to do my job, and I'm still going to do my best to bring artists in.
I feel like that's part of just being on the internet.
Absolutely. Oh my God.
Internet experience.
Oh.
If you put shit on the internet, there's going to be some people that are going to find something wrong
about it. And then, of course, there are tons of fans who are more than these people who are supportive and are amazing. And then, like I saw people fighting, like, for
each
me.
Other, each other.
Yeah, they were fighting each other.
They're
like, you know, how dare you talk about her like that? And I was just like, oh my God, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
And, like, so there are that many more people who will be like, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Like, this is her job. So like, give it a chance. But at the same time, it is, I know you would also relate to this so much, like, it's so difficult to like disconnect yourself from that hate and sort of, you know, find a way to enjoy it, because like, not enjoy it, but like, make it work for you, you know, and feel like, okay, like, I need to disconnect myself from the negativity, because like, you said like, you now find it amusing.
I find it amusing, but at the same time, if I could disconnect myself from it, I would.
Completely, yeah.
But at the same time, I find that this is part of the job.
It is part of the job.
So it's like, I can't be like a online personality without, you know, some sort of social media presence. And
absolutely,
if you have a social media presence, there's going to be idiots.
I know. There are so many of my friends who are journalists who... And then when you have the blue tick next to your name, it's like an issue.
Oh.
It's like, oh, you're an important account. Why are you talking about this? Why do you have an opinion? And I'm like... I
wanted the blue tick.
Ew.
like, why are you not giving me the blue tick, Twitter? Hey,
damn,
I'm not
it, Twitter.
Famous enough for you. Oh, no. Really?
But maybe it's better not to have it. Because, yeah.
It's like, I'm just some random ass dude. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Like,
exactly. when suddenly you're like, oh, it's a blue tick, so it's
verified.
More important. And I'm like,
you have authority.
Authority. I'm like, yes, me and like five people who actually listen to what I say have so much authority right now. I'm like, are you serious? And there's so many journalists are like, why? Because like, our jobs are to report and to state facts. That's what we do. We're not like making up shit. Like, that's something journalists, we will not do. Like, unless you're a shit journalist, then please leave. But rest of us who know how to do our jobs and do it seriously, we're not putting out information that's made up.
No.
We're not like, you know, trying to lie to you. It's not, at least the people I know. And But I feel like a lot of the time, fans, and I've been on that side. I've been a fan, like, I've been fandom culture since I was 11. So I know that you feel wronged if something about negative about the artist you love is said, or they're in some negative context, or something where your hope is crushed, where like, someone is saying, this is how much work it's going to take to bring the artist here, and you're like, no, how can that be? I want it to be faster. I want it to happen now. And a part of you feels like, oh god, like, I don't want this to be true. And I feel like a lot of that sadness and anger at not being able to reach the artist is directed at us who are able to reach the artist.
Yeah, I feel that sentiment too. Like, it's like, who are these guys that they get to meet when I'm like a bigger fan? And which is true. Like, you know, I'm not a fan of every artist I meet. But at the same time, like, it's just our job.
It is our job.
Yeah. If you wanna meet those people, then start a K-pop YouTube channel or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Become a K-pop journalist.
Yeah, go into Rolling Stone India.
Yeah, I'm like, try, apply, see if you get in. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you think you can do this, do it.
And honestly, like, a lot of times we're not really meeting them in terms of a fan person. We're there to do work, right? Like, because even before I did this job as a YouTuber, K-pop YouTuber, I was in the K-pop music distributors.
Yes.
And I met lots of artists. And at that time, I was even more detached. I was like, fuck, who are these guys? Just get this done. You know, like, because I was thinking it strictly as work at that time, especially. So, you know, it's not, I mean, I don't hate it. I really like it when we meet artists. But at the same time, I think it's kind of coming from a different mentality.
You're bound by that professionalism.
Yeah, you have to stay professional.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm fanboying over.
Yeah,
know,
I don't know. Like, okay, that's another thing I get all the time is from people. I don't know. Do you get this too, where people are like, oh my god, did you cry? Did you freak out when you met this artist? And I'm like, inside.
Inside.
In the inside. Like, I mean, you have to keep it together. It's not what fans think when you are representing an organization.
No.
And you are representing your country and your fandom as well. And you can't be that crazy reporter who then got escorted out by security.
Yeah.
So you have
to. Are there instances like that?
Like, I mean, I don't want to be that person ever.
Okay.
Yeah. So then it's like, you know, you have to give the artist a good impression where they're like, oh, I want to go there. Then I want to learn. And they should be able to comfortably ask you questions too. And I should be in the right frame of mind to... answer that and represent, you know. So I'm not like meeting artists to like, hey, let's have a drink, man, and like, let's chill or whatever. It's more about on a professional angle, like you do that too. So I feel a lot of the time fans, they don't see the entire picture, and I don't blame them because like I said, I've been a fan as well. And when I joined the business and like the music industry, it was like a lens had been lifted off. I'm like, damn, there's so much work that goes into everything.
I know.
I as a fan never saw.
It's crazy,
right? And now you see it and you're like, oh my god, like everything that I thought was a certain way is not that way. You have to unlearn and then relearn. So that, at least that was my experience.
And the thing with like the music industry is we're only shown the end product, right? We're only shown the very, very tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
And to create that tip of the iceberg, there's so much, there's so many people working behind the scenes and so much, so many things that has to be done in order to get that little tip of the iceberg. So it's, it's crazy.
Absolutely. I actually had a very interesting conversation with Eden, who is ATEEZ's producer. And he was saying how when you see ATEEZ as the final product, they say 8 makes one team.
Yeah.
But he's like, it's 100 makes one.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's not 8 makes one.
It's not 8 makes one. They're also part of the team.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's
yeah,
that
yeah.
many
yeah.
people who come together and create that process and put out what you as a fan finally like consume.
Exactly. So like sometimes I think personally that gets kind of in the way for me, at least in terms of really emotionally connecting with these songs sometimes, because like I know that the artists work hard, but I also know that there's like this entire team probably trying to figure out like what I'm thinking when I'm listening to this song. It's like they're dissecting
yeah.
it
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
it's like a very scientific
like
thing
yeah, yeah.
So it's like I kind of have mixed feelings. I kind of have, like when I listen to a good song, I'll be like, oh damn, this is good, but then at the same time it's like, man, they think of like all this scientific work and
I know,
planning,
the research,
the marketing,
exactly.
everything, and it's like
patterns, everything.
They know me too well. You know what I mean? So I have mixed feelings on that, and definitely.
I know. And I think it's true of all of us, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I think all of us who are in the biz, we're like, yeah, it's
you
like
you kind of get jaded. Maybe
you do.
Yeah,
like after
yeah.
a while, I'm just gonna listen and enjoy it because if I think too much about, you know, because that's pop in general globally,
yeah,
wherever
that's
you look,
true.
That's pop.
True. That's true.
And right now, it's being applied to every genre you can think of as streaming services get more analytical. Anything that's getting more research based, it's and the feedback goes back to the artist. They're also gonna be affected by that, and they're also gonna start like even if they're writing their own songs, they're also gonna think about so many artists have told me this. They're like, there's that pressure where you know what works, you know, like on a pop scale or on a charting scale, and then this is what you want to write about, and the two don't necessarily match, and it's that pressure, like should I do this, should I do that, what do, like so artists, even songwriters and producers on their own are having a lot of conflict within themselves. Like should I, is am I still staying true to myself if I've researched what my fans liked and put out the same thing, you know? But then I feel that's just the way music's evolving now.
Regarding the algorithm and, you know, research and stuff like that, I've actually noticed a trend and a good example would be Old Town Road.
Oh yeah.
You know how it doesn't have an ending chorus?
Yeah.
Right? So like I found that like that's a way to make the listener feel like the song hasn't ended and they're very unsatisfied at the end. So like,
and you
want
to play it again.
Again. And
that's
it's
a
like
very
a
real thing.
Yeah, it's like they've catered it towards the algorithm and the service.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like kind of genius, but at the same time it's like, oh, the music is becoming kind of weird. It's becoming like just catered towards the services not the craft itself. And I also feel like have you listened to Tyler, the Creator's new album?
Yes.
All those songs are very short. And I honestly don't think he'd be the last person to try to cater towards, music services, I think. But at the same time, that kind of works, you know?
Yeah.
It's super short. And there's just one verse and it changes all that. There's no, like, it's not a typical pop structure of, you know, two or three choruses.
It's not
like
that same pattern of chorus, verse, chorus.
Yeah.
And like it comes back to why a lot of artists want to do singles only and they don't want to do LPs because our attention spans that little and they are, even though if they want to do an LP in the sense like they enjoy doing it, they're like refraining because they're like, people don't have the attention span to sit through the whole thing. So I guess it comes, it stems from the same thing where like, how do I grab and keep someone's attention like as long as I can.
So I don't know, as somebody who really likes listening by the album, it's kind of sad. I listen to the that was my habit since growing up, listening to music by the album, because I would buy CDs. So it's like, it's difficult to like just like, pick songs. You know, it's like, it's not like an MP3 player. So I was so used to listening from front to back, and that's how I always think an album should be listened to. But nowadays, especially with K-pop maybe and pop in general, it's like, it's just so catered towards bringing out singles and music videos that there's no real connection between the songs. It's not really, there's no like theme. There's no like very one unifying theme. And I find that very, very rare. And I honestly wish more artists would do it.
I know, me too.
But I don't see it happening, honestly.
It's like, I
it's
mean...
It's difficult, man.
It's so difficult. It really is. Because, I mean, like, of course, you have your BTS who do stuff like this. But then at the same time, it's so few. It's such a, it's actually, like, if you put it into percentage and very, compare very them, like, globally to artists who are, like, putting out LPs, first of all, the number is low. And second of all, like, artists who actually put out LPs that are, like you said, like, a story running through it. I mean, the last one I heard that, I mean, okay, not the last one I heard, but the one that has left such an impact on me about how the entire album was packaged as a story was My Chemical Romance's The Black Parade.
That's a long time ago.
Long time ago. And nothing has made that sort of impact again. I think Dean's 130 Mood Treble made an impact as well, because that like was an entire story, and he was so smart about, like, meaning the entire thing was crafted, like the story ended with the first track. So you listen to it once and then you listen to it again backwards. Like, at least that's how I did. And the whole thing, every song is part, is a part of the puzzle. So that for me was like, I am getting flashbacks to MCR, and when I heard that album, I was like, I'm back, like, this is happening again. But then it's so few artists who are doing that.
I think the last album for me was E-Sense. Do you know E-Sense? The hip-hop artist. He's a Korean hip-hop artist. He released an album called Anecdote. And I think it was after he served in the prison. He had a prison sentence. And it's like him looking back and seeing like, oh, what did my life become? And how did I come here? You know, what do I do now? And it's very dark, but like it has a theme, connecting theme. And I really like that. So yeah, it's really difficult to find that in music this year. And
like, and a lot of the time, I guess even it is a lot of work for an artist in this time, because everyone is so competitive and everyone is putting out content like crazy. And to create things like this, it takes a lot of time and planning and effort. And if you do, even if you do have a team like helping you out with it, it's still going to be a process. And again, like, which we are not privy to. Like, so many things we don't see, like, that goes into the creation of an album like this. And I can imagine it must be, like...
just stressful.
So stressful. I know, like, expectations on Dean right now are riding so high. And it's been ages since he's released an album, right? And I know, like, that must be difficult. That must be difficult for any artist who's dropped something so brilliantly tied together. And I know MCR also had that pressure. Because you've, how do you top what you've already done? And I feel this keeps a lot of musicians, at least from what they've told me, they're afraid to like, oh, shall I do this again? And maybe I shouldn't do it again. Maybe I shouldn't, like, you know, try and recreate that. And I understand that. I think that that's like
that
a valid...
so tough.
Yeah, it's so difficult where you're like, you get so much success off of something iconic that you've created and put out into the world. And then after that, you're like thinking like, oh shit.
What do I do now?
Exactly.
And I think the one of the reasons why artists are now preferring putting out singles, other than like the attention span, shortened attention span of people, is that like when, you know, traditionally, like musicians would put out an album, they would do a tour for like, I don't know, 2 years,
yeah,
and then they would go back to the studio, maybe do a year, and then like 3 years later, they have an album. Like it's like 2 or 3 years apart, right?
Yeah.
Usually. That's how the usual recording process would work. And the thing with that is like, if your album flops, like that's 3 years down the drain.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's very difficult to rebound back from,
yeah,
you know, all these years of work, and then you have a full product and then that flops. It's very difficult. So I think by putting out singles and like these short EPs, it's giving them the flexibility. Like even if one of them fails, they can
yeah,
rebound back from that and people forget about it and it's good. But if it's like, okay, we're stuck with promoting this album for the next 2 years in the world tour, then that's like, we're
fucked.
You're
like, oh shit.
Yeah, we
it's
can't
such a flop
shit.
And now what do I do?
Yeah, what do I do?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do think like that kind of aspect plays in part. It gives a little bit more assurance.
It's fine. I've got more stuff. Like, I've got more stuff.
Yeah. So, okay, I know this is
don't
shit.
Don't leave me.
Don't panic, people. We got more shit coming out.
And I think it lets them test out,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if they
yeah,
want to
yeah.
try something.
Gets
and
more experimental.
Yeah, they're like, okay, that did not work. Like, they drop something, they're like, oh, shit, like that. Everyone's like, what are you doing? So then they'll be like, okay, maybe not that. Mm-hmm. Let me try again and drop something more, like, what you're used to, or something I can work with again, and like you said, not suffer any losses in time and money, which are that huge, like 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. But do you feel like as you're since you're like a journalist covering K-pop, do you feel like there's a content, the amount of content you're receiving isn't it a bit overwhelming?
It's so overwhelming. Oh my
god.
It's
just too much, right?
It's too much.
Do you follow everything? Or?
I follow everything. So it's crazy.
Man, you're crazy.
No, yeah. I can't even, but I can't cover all of it. You know, like that's the point. Like I'm aware of almost everything that happens, but I'm just one person.
Yeah.
And I can't write and cover about all of it. Like this trip, I've been in Korea, right? For a couple of days and I've been so busy.
Yeah.
And that means I haven't been able to write about the new Stray Kids release, Red Velvet. Like, I haven't been able to do any of that.
No.
And that's freaking me out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, although my bosses are never going to be like, oh, why wasn't it out yet? They're never going to do that to me because they know, like, I'm working really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but at the same time, your own brain is so aware of how many releases are just flying past
I know,
you.
I know. I see it on Twitter and say, oh, fuck, like a Red Velvet's released something yesterday, so
I haven't even heard the track yet. I'm like,
I heard the opening 30 seconds and then I'm gonna maybe do an explained. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't heard it yet. And I'm like, because like I said, I had no time to breathe. And this morning, even like the rush to get here, because I was but like it was I was thinking, oh shit, like today itself I have a flight at 6 p.m. But before that, I have two
meetings. Yeah.
So I'm just like, what am I doing? And then you want to do it. You want, like, I want to be here with you and talk to you. I want to talk to the people I'm going to talk to after this. So, I mean, it's a lot, but I'm happy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then again, like, I guess from the outside, it's fans have to sort of, they don't see it again. I'm like, they don't see like what is going on. That's why this trip, like last trip, I didn't post images with people who I was meeting. But then now when I did, like I was like, okay, you know, allow yourself that. Like you should post pictures with these artists, because what happened was when I posted pictures, even the fans felt like there is something happening. Like there is like representation out there, like, oh look, she's talking about us, like to the artist, and this is adding to the movement and the goal of like bringing them here. So I feel like even for me, like to see that interaction that the fans are sending messages to the artist and stuff, I was like, okay, this is kicked off and there is movement happening. Because otherwise, if you come to Korea and there's just silence on social media platforms, like for me, everyone's just like, what is she doing there? And this time,
she's just vacationing.
Like, what are you doing? And that's why when I said I was having meetings and stuff, people didn't take me very seriously the last time. And I was like, this time I'm a post who I am meeting and then, you know, get some work done.
Good job.
So I was like,
good on you.
A little bit. Like, I was so hesitant about it. But then my friends were like, you need to do this.
Yeah.
Like, you should do this because otherwise it will seem like India's getting nowhere. I mean, not that we are. We are getting amazing places. And we need to put out there and be like, yeah, we got game. Like, in your face. And then so that the other artists know as well. So, like, someone might see a picture of, I don't know, I put up a picture of me and JB. And I hope that maybe Jackson sees that and he's just like, oh, damn. Like, even I need to go to India. And, like, this will, like, solidify it in his head. And he'll be like, okay, okay, someone actually came here and met him.
Reminder.
Yeah. So, he'll be like, maybe I need to make this work because I think, like, what we've talked about before, like, you and I and, like, David, we've talked about how artists also have a say in where they want to go.
Yeah.
So that is my goal here. I'm like, let me just put it into their heads a little bit.
Add a little slot. Yeah.
Just a little bit. And then, like, your fans also will see that picture and then come and, like, bombard you with messages. Come to India. And that's basically... that's what I want to do.
Awesome. Well, that's a good note to end it here, I think.
Oh, okay.
Should I come to India too? Now I'm brainwashed.
You have to come. Oh, my God. India. Okay, I've been trying to brainwash you like this like entire trip. I'm just like, oh, like, you know, sending you screenshots.
I told you yesterday, 2 days ago, but I told her, like, I really want to go to India. I've been wanting to go since I was in college. It's like a spiritual place. I love the Beatles, minus the LSD. But I just have to clarify that these days. But
oh my God.
But I just want to spend a long time there if I'm going to go. So I'm just putting it off until I get enough vacation time, which I don't know. Like, I'm like you, I need to work. I'm very ambitious. I need to put in a lot of work to my business because I like it.
So the way to get you there is actually through the business. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna like try and figure that out.
Make
so at least
together.
We'll work on something together and bring you to India, at least even if it's just for work.
Okay.
And then we'll get a little time then. I'll take you out for food and stuff. And
awesome. So I'll look forward to it.
Yes,
thank you, Riddhi.
Please. Thank you, Danny. Oh my
thank
God.
You for coming, despite being very busy. You got to go to whatever label.
Oh, my God.
You got like 2 meetings again before you go. So any last words?
Oh, thank you for having me on the podcast. I think this is my first podcast experience.
Really?
Oh,
awesome.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. And Indian fans, please annoy them and keep telling them to come because and send them your love. Like, don't like just be mean. Like, also be like come here. Yeah. But we also love you.
Yeah.
So
I know you guys love us. So
So many people love you in India. So
thank you.
I would love to see you there. And yeah, guys, like, be more positive on the internet. What I don't know what else to say.
Stop shitting on Riddhi's articles.
Oh my God.
People, shut up.
People are really
shut the
sweet.
Fuck up. And just appreciate her representing India and trying to bring K-pop artists to y'all. She's doing a great job. And
I'll
keep reading your articles. Everybody, go check out. Or maybe don't check out Riddhi on Twitter. Because I'm no, you don't. Just shut up. And bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Woo.